Hey everybody, how's it going? It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2019, in a new episode of What's Up with Danny Podcasts coming at ya. Today's episode is with Cameron I don't know how to say his last name. I've known him for years and I don't know how to pronounce it. Jesus. Yeah, you'll see it. Pronounce it the way you want. Sorry, Cam, I don't know how to pronounce your last name. I actually think I do, and I think I said it in front of you one time, and you corrected me, and I don't remember how you corrected me. So, if you're really curious, ask Cam. Anyways, Cam, if you don't know, was at one point the drummer in the band Audrey, as well as the band Secret Grief, slash, I say slash because they changed their name to Secret Grief from Tiger Tiger. So you probably saw him play drums in those bands, or you might know him now from his current music project called Observer. There's going to be some links in the info for this to check out the music. You'll be able to follow him on Instagram. I think it's Music by Observer with the at sign in front of it. And then he's got music on Bandcamp as well. The links, like I said, will be in the info for that. I had a great time talking to Cam. He's one of my oldest friends. And I say like oldest, meaning that we've been friends for a long time. I think he's roughly the same age I am. He's not old by any means. And old is subjective. Depends on what kind of person you are, I think. What you think old is. But that's not what we're talking about here. Yeah, it's a fun episode. We talked a lot. Again, not going to recap the episode. You can just listen and find out what we talked about. It's a pretty heavy music one. We talk a lot about music. So if you don't like music, who do you think you are? I mean, right? Come on. Music's amazing, but, enjoy the episode. Like I said, we got a lot of episodes in the works to be recorded. I'm going to record one tonight with the band Brother Adams, and then tomorrow with some people in the band Fairwind. So lots of stuff coming up. Hopefully going to set up a few more in the future. So yeah, I don't have a whole lot to talk about because I just did one of these yesterday for the episode. So check that out. Jessica Harper. I know how to pronounce her last name. That episode was released yesterday and is up now if you haven't had a chance to check it out. And Friday, we'll be releasing an episode with Mike Schertenlieb. I think I know how to pronounce his last name. His is a lot harder than Cam's is, but I know how to pronounce it. I'm going to work on that. I should be a better host and know how to pronounce my guests' last names. I don't know why I'm harping on that so much, so I will stop talking about that for now and let you enjoy the episode. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe if you haven't already. Recommend this podcast to a friend. Danny.Bruick.shows@gmail if you have anything to say, like a comment or a question or a suggestion. I recently got a bunch of great suggestions for guests from a friend of mine, Joanne. And that's a huge help for me because it gives me ideas on who to talk to. So if you have suggestions or you want to hear a point of view from somebody that you think might be interesting, just send me an email or even hit me up on Facebook. Yeah. Anywho, enjoy this episode with Cam. Joe Moran made like a intro song for it, and so my idea was I was gonna play that behind the little intros that I do or whatever, and it was only a minute and a half, and I couldn't figure out how to edit it in so that it played throughout the entire. So it would play for a minute and a half, and then it would just cut to me being just talking and like silence in the background. And I was like, that's weird. So I it's weird to like. I'd have to record the intro and then have someone write the song in the exact, however long it could be, like 5 minutes and 42 seconds or whatever. But yeah, I do like all the little like pings, and my favorite is it's just a real subtle beep. It sounds like when you if you watch like deleted scenes from a movie and they do the clicker, and then you hear that little beep after it. It reminds me of that, and I love it.
Like before the countdown thing.
Yeah.
Like the boop.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, it's weird. Just like little sounds like that. There's, I enjoy them probably more than I should. I don't know what it is about them, but we can. Well, first off, thanks for doing the podcast.
Dude, no problem. Thank you. This is great.
I'm very excited to talk to you. I feel like I never know what I'm going to talk about going into the pod. And you said you listen, so you probably have heard me say that a million times.
Right.
But yeah, when we, I mean, we just mentioned talking about sounds, so that's probably a good way to start. Because you've been making sounds.
I've been making sounds
for a long time now.
I've known you for a long time, dude.
Yeah, we've known.
Kind of crazy. You're one of my oldest friends, man.
The best part about doing these, especially with people that I've known for a long time, it's always a reminder of like, when do we meet? You know what I mean? Like, and it's weird to think about it in a timeline, but I can't really remember.
Yeah, like, I mean,
when I know it was through music shows.
Right, right. The whole, yeah, that whole scene, and then I remember we really kind of like hung out more at MCC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we kind
yeah.
of had like the same breaks or whatever a few times, and that was like
that was where we really got to know each other a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think I was thinking about it the other day once we said we were going to do this, and I don't remember the full name of the band, but it was you and Drake and I think Danielle and Derek.
Oh.
Maybe.
Okay, yeah.
It was way back. We were both probably still in high school at the time, and I think it was, I was trying to remember if it was like Johnson Hall or that old Battle of the Bands that used to be at
Crosswinds.
Yeah, Crosswinds, that church in North Muskegon. Yeah, it was something like that, but I remember something Skyline or something like that.
Oh, Inner City Skyline.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I knew it was Skyline, but I couldn't think of what the other half of that was. And that was that the first band that you were in, or were you?
Essentially, we changed our name to that.
Oh, okay.
It was originally New Frequency.
Oh, okay. Right on.
But yeah, that was like kind of like the start of it. You know, Derek and I met in church growing up, like young, you know, 7, 8 years old, and then we both kind of like separately started playing music, and then it just overlapped, and we met Drake and all this other, it just kind of happened, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
So, yeah. And then, obviously, Derek was in Audrey and Secret Grief with me and stuff, so.
What? Now, you were, well, actually, the more that I'm thinking about it, now, you were you in band? Weren't you in band? You were on the drum line.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah,
for
band all through high school. Yeah.
At Reese Puffer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't actually think we met, but once we got to know each other a little bit better, it clicked in my head later on that I think we were in Showcase in the same year.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was thinking back to, like, some of the better acts I had seen, and I think maybe it was just you at one year.
Yeah.
You were playing a drum. You had a snare with you,
I
think.
Yeah, I did the snare solo. Yeah. With, like, the full harness and, like, the marching. Yeah, that whole vibe, dude.
And I remember thinking about it when it clicked, and I was like, wait, that was Cam.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. Like, even before we really knew each other.
Right.
Kind of both do. I think I was in playing a song or something. I remember one year it was three of us, and they added one person so we could do the group, so they could send somebody else as a solo. And they just like, we just wrote the worst song. I don't even remember what the song was, but it was just kind of boring, and we got like zero crowd response, I remember. Right. But I think you were in that, and then I remember the other thing was another drum line, maybe, but it was a bunch of them.
Oh, I wasn't in that, but that was, yeah.
I think
yeah.
Derek was in that, though, because I remember talking to him about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was. Where they did, like, the... Yeah, I don't. I guess I don't really remember. It wasn't a part of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. When, like, what made you want to jump from... Well, okay, no, let's start out. I like hearing... Because I started playing in band, I think, 5th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like they gave everybody recorders, and so it was like a class that everybody had to do or whatever.
Interesting. Okay.
But and you did a concert at the end of the year for all the parents and stuff. But and then I went and played saxophone for like 3 or 4 years, in band, but I never quite made it to the high school band. What sort of got you into, like, what made you want to join, like, the band in school?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I don't really know, like, what made me want to do it. Mm-hmm. I was always, like, my mom would always play music and stuff growing up, and I guess, like, I was, like, really drawn to that. And, like, it's funny you do that. You mentioned, like, everybody getting recorded thing. For me, it was, like, there's, like, an announcement in fifth grade. Is like, you know, anyone that wants to be in the band, just go down here and figure out what instrument you want to play. And so, mm-hmm. you know, a bunch of us went down there and, like, tried playing the clarinet and just sucked at it. Tried playing the trumpet, just sucked at it. And, like, that was, like, kind of it. I didn't try anything else. And the guy was just like, okay, you'll play the clarinet. And, it was like getting back into like homeroom or whatever. Like my buddy Richie was just like, how did you do when you like asked you to play the drums? And I was like, you didn't even ask me to do that. I wanna do that. And like, I don't really know. Like, it must have been like, I mean, my mom was a huge Dave Matthews Band fan. And so the drums on those records growing up were always just so cool and like interesting. And so, yeah, that's like when I went to like go get my clarinet, I was like, yeah, can I just play percussion instead? And so I swapped it out for this huge ass like bell kit get up thing with like the drum pad stand and the mm-hmm. and that was, I guess that's all she wrote, man. I guess I got hooked on that, and yeah, it's been a huge part of my life ever since.
Right on.
Yeah,
you mentioned that. I remember that we had a similar thing at Ravana where it was I think that was what made me do it, was all my friends went to the little like meeting, I guess you would call
it. Right.
And I was looking through the instruments and I remember thinking, well, my parents are never going to let me play drums.
Like, yeah.
They'll hate that.
Right. So. Right.
And then that was what led me to eventually the saxophone. And I really loved it. I wish I still had a saxophone.
Yeah.
I wish I still played it.
Are dope.
And I bought a trumpet at the, there was an Unruly gear exchange.
Oh, okay.
I've played it like four times since I bought it. It makes me nervous playing it in the apartment,
right,
just
right.
to, you know, piss off my neighbors. Plus, I'm not good at it yet.
Right,
so
right.
It makes things worse a little bit. But so what made you want to, like obviously you learned how to play your instrument in band, and you probably got better as you went, mm-hmm. as you do
right,
at practice.
Right.
What point did you realize, like, you wanted to start doing this, like, outside of school? Maybe play, you know, louder with other people, like with guitars,
right, like,
and
yeah, I guess it was just like just that whole like, you know, rock star mentality, or just like, oh, that would be cool to just like play for people, or like, because I remember going to Caleb Richards' house,
mm-hmm.
and in like fifth grade, and his dad had like this huge like studio in his basement, you know. Yeah, the drum set, and I'd never played a drum set. I was like, yeah, just, you know, play it. And I just, you know, it's a simple like beat. It's like, whoa, this thing is sweet. And then that Christmas I got a drum set, and it was like, from there it was like playing along to like my dad's old like Led Zeppelin tapes, and like trying to like emulate everything, and just like, I guess it was just like that huge like rock sound, and that I was really like, yeah. And then like seeing, like going to church and like seeing people play and stuff, it was just always a really like, you know, emotional experience. And
mm-hmm.
and so, yeah, I guess that's what I was drawn to. And also it was a way for me to, like, because I never envisioned myself, like, performing or, like, singing or anything like that, because I guess like, what I'm getting as the drums is, like, it's like a blocker. Mm. Like, I don't feel like I'm exposed.
Right.
And so even to this day, it's, like, almost like a security blanket where it's, like, I have this to, like, separate myself from the audience, where if I, like, didn't have that, I'd, like, stand and, like, play guitar or, like,
mm-hmm.
move around. It would be like, it's very intimidating to me, that idea. So
right. And it's funny you say that, because as a guitar player, I found like when I started playing in bands and in shows, first band I was ever in was just, you know, the acoustic band, the two piece, myself and Todd, and we played shows, and I always had a little bit like nerves, like heavy nerves. But then once you threw the full band in there, it was almost like having that loud drummer sort of made me feel like it canceled me out a little
oh,
bit.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
It's like on maybe the opposite, where the drums block you.
Right, right.
The drums made me feel like, well, only I can hear me now. So this
right,
is,
right.
I'm a little bit more comfortable on stage. Or maybe it was just having more people on stage,
yeah.
You know. You mentioned the rock star attitude or
yeah.
whatever, which is so funny to me, because I think there was in time, It wasn't ever really that bad. I mean, we were just kids playing shows at bingo halls and shit like that, but it wasn't ever anything too crazy. But I feel like I remember there was a certain shift. I don't really know. Maybe it was like 19 or 20, where I obviously didn't do like a ton of growing up, but I just was like, wait, music can be fun and not like, it's not about being cool, you know what I mean? Right. Like, what do you think? Did you ever have that where, like, was there ever a point where maybe music felt like more of a, not, I don't want to say competition because that's a bad word to use, but I think you get what I'm saying. Like, it went from, you realized, oh, I can just have fun doing this and it's for me. Yeah. You know,
I guess,
what I
like,
mean?
It's, I guess it's really always been about that. You know, I did say, like, the rock star thing, but that wasn't, like, the ego aspect. It's just, like, the more opportunity of, like, you know, sustaining yourself as a musician and, like, getting to play with your friends on stage and, like, you know, this sense of camaraderie and stuff is, like, always very attractive. Like, the whole, like, you know, like, signing autographs and all that stuff, that's not never been really appealing to, like, the fame, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, just that, like, idea of, like, I love playing the drums. It'd be sweet to get paid playing the drums.
Right.
And, like, for different kinds of people, seeing different cultures, all that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I feel like saying this is gonna sound bad, but we were joking around at Tim practice a couple weeks ago, and I feel like I mentioned something about, like, I think it was Trevor saying something about trying to live out his dreams or whatever, and I made the joke about, well, you are a musician, like, you're gonna make money doing that, like, it wasn't that exact joke, but it was just like, it was funny because we all kind of know, like, there's not a ton of money in this.
Right.
Like, unless you get to some crazy, ridiculous level or whatever.
Right.
But you were pretty heavily involved in a, you know, DIY project with, I mean, Tiger 2 Secret Grief,
right,
and even with Audrey too.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think, like, what does DIY mean to you? Like, I feel like you could ask that question and you get a wide variety of answers, but, like, do you think, as far as, like, do it yourself, do you think that's the right way to go about music? Or do you think, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to ask you, I guess, but...
Well, I guess, I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, there's a certain mentality of, like, the DIY attitude where it's, like, you know, there's, like, that artist's, like, aspect of it where it's like, this is what I want to do, this is, like, I'm not gonna let anybody else tell me what to do and all that. And so I think, you know, that's kind of part of it, but I was never really like that, you know. I kind of like, you know, being told what to play sometimes, because then it's just, I'm just chilling, you know, and like, I can, like, do this really well and that's what it is. But yeah, I don't know, like, you know, it's that, like, it's incredibly dedicated, you know, DIY, it's like, there's a certain tenacity and stuff to it that you need to, like, survive in that world, I think. But yeah, I guess, I don't know, did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, again, I don't even really know what the question was, but I remember one of the, you guys might have still been Tiger. Well, I feel like one tour was Tiger that I went on, and then one tour was Secret Grief, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
You guys had changed the name by the time.
Yeah, because the one you went on with Tiger was Courtney, right?
Yeah.
And then
yep.
the one
and
with
then...
Secret Grief was with Caleb and Jimbo?
Possibly.
Right? Or no, was it... I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't know. I feel like maybe Jimbo was on one of the tours, but I don't know if I was ever with you guys with Caleb.
Oh, okay. I was mistaken.
But I remember you saying at one point that you had just had, like, you brought, like, $40 with you on the tour, and I just was like, oh, wow. Like, that's the dream right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, out for a week, got $40. Like, this is what people talk about before they hit it big. You know what I
mean?
Yeah, like,
exactly.
Like, those are
that's
the...
That's really funny.
But, like, it is a weird thing. Like, I mean, you're out there doing something you love, and then you also, like, you have a life back here that you have to come back to at some point, too.
No,
and,
totally.
It can be pretty stressful, especially if you're, you know, struggling. And I feel like the tours I went in with you guys on were always really solid. I don't remember there ever being, like, a bad show.
Right.
Well, bad show is a weird way to say it, but, like, a poorly attended show, or just one that wasn't really...
Oh, you went with us when Matt was with us.
Yep.
Matt Raddick, that was a Tiger.
Yep.
And then Secret Grief was with Courtney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we played like the wrestling rink and
Indiana
and shit.
One of my favorite images that's always gonna be in my head, I hope at least, is just standing there in between matches and watching how much fun Corey and Sean were having.
That was a great moment for them.
Surrounded by children who didn't really, I'm assuming, didn't really have a passion for wrestling.
Yeah,
and just wanted to run around the ring, and it was the best. And when they showed us the moves after.
Right. Everything. No, that was that, great. We got to get in the ring. And
that was very cool.
Derek got like suplex or some shit.
So that's okay. Let's talk about your sort of transition from, you know, inner city Skyline into playing with Audrey. Because you weren't the original drummer for Audrey.
Correct, yeah.
You had joined the band after.
Yeah. So, I guess inner city Skyline was kind of, you know, fizzling out. It was very much a high school band, you know. We tried and we did a couple of shows in college or whatever, but then, you know, I was like, didn't really have a shows and stuff. And then Caleb, of all people, he emailed me or told me, and he's like, yeah, this band Audrey's looking for a drummer. I think you'd fit in great. You know, you should, you know, try out. And they had like a MySpace, like ad or whatever, like a post. And I replied to it, and I remember like Sean, I think it was Sean who I was communicating with, but just bringing my drum set into like just like the middle of Muskegon Heights, and just like all right, here we go, and it was just like this like old 3358 basement, and set up my big obnoxious drum kit, and yeah, just like rehearsed with them and learned the songs and played a show. And And that was, like, the stipulation was, like, yeah, you know, like, learn the songs. We want to play a couple shows with you before we make anything official, blah, blah, blah. There was, like, a very, like, you know, like, Corey was sure to, like, send over this document that was, like, a bunch of bullet points. Like, this is not a hobby band. Like, we're trying to do this for real. Like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so, and I really liked that. I wanted that, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, it worked out really well. And I was able to get my foot in the door with them, and played a lot of shows and met Scott and the Livingston County scene and all that, and mm-hmm. that's how that sort of transitioned into Tiger. But yeah, it's kind of wild mm-hmm. to think about.
It's funny that you mentioned MySpace, because I feel like Audrey was crushing it in the MySpace days.
Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest. I know they had like I don't even remember how many like plays they had or whatever, mm-hmm. but yeah, it was like that Go Lightly track is like, you know, really cool, catchy, melodic stuff that, mm-hmm. you know, I could definitely play and think add to, so, yeah.
Now, does it kind of feel, and I'm just going to check the time, it's always distracting, but I'm just making sure, because we get the hour thing or whatever, but what is it, so it feels like you kind of, with Audrey, like you said, you got your foot in the door, and you got comfortable playing with them, and then the transition into Tiger, which was kind of almost seamless, really, because...
Yeah, know, it was, like, kind of spooky and like, how weird it was.
Do you think, like... What do you credit that to? Like, sort of being able to... I don't want to say fall into... Having something sort of fall into place the way that it did with those two bands, like...
Yeah, I'm not really too sure. I mean, I will say I was a huge Tiger fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being front row and center for their, like... I'll still be there when you're ready for it release. And I was like kind of like really meeting and hanging out with Scott and like Ron and all those guys. And I remember playing euchre with them after the show and stuff. And, but I think it was just like, you know, that like sort of like mutual respect of, you know, how much as Audrey enjoyed Scott as like a songwriter musician. And then, you know, how much he enjoyed our playing and musicianship as well. And so it's just like super serendipitous that, I don't know, Ep was just like, yeah, I'm out of here. And then Scott's band was like, yeah, I'm out of here. And so then he's like, I want to play some full band shows. Do you guys want to play with me? And we're like, yeah, sure. And then, like, in those rehearsals, it kind of, like, really gelled. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to, like, make it an official thing.
Right. Right on. And I feel like, yeah, it was cool to see, because Audrey was one of my favorite bands. Like, I remember... I knew that I liked you guys a lot because I remember staying at a Johnson Bingo Hall show until 1 a.m. or maybe it was even like 2 a.m. just because I was so excited to watch you guys play. And there was like 20 bands on the bill.
Yes.
And so it was just, it was brutal to sit there and watch. I mean, it, maybe this sounds bad, but the same band play over and over and over
crazy,
again.
Like, you know, hardcore, metalcore, whatever it was, you know.
And then just to like finally be able, and I think there was maybe, you know, 10 people still in at the hall when you guys went on. And I remember being very annoyed about that because I was like, these guys are so good. How, you know, why did everybody leave? But let's talk about that a little bit, because I want to talk a lot about touring, because I love tour stories and I love talking about that stuff. So let's start out with when you guys decided that you wanted to sort of start hitting the road, you know, doing a weekend here and there, doing a couple weeks, 5 or more days, whatever it was. When did you guys sort of get into that rhythm?
I think it was like pretty much right off the get-go, you know, when Scott really wanted to, like, you know, move forward with the full band thing. I don't remember a whole lot of lag time. I think it was that summer. I'm just trying to really, it was a long time ago. My memory is not very good, but I'm sure there are many different sides to the story, but going from, I remember playing at just a few shows, Tiger Tiger went really well. And I don't really know how playing with Things Fall Apart happened or whatever, but that was like our first tour with Scott. Was that, it was like a 2.5-3 week long tour with Things Fall Apart, and it went really well. And that's very rare, you know, for a band's like first like tour. Well, Scott has been on tour, went on tour with Tiger Tiger before, so it wasn't Tiger Tiger's first tour, but it was my first tour. And so like having that go so well and just how much fun it was, I think that really just like, you know, lit a fire under all of us to like try to pursue this thing as much as we could. And like, you know, all of us living, like Corey and I lived in Kalamazoo, Sean and Derek lived in Muskegon, Scott lived all the way in Brighton and Lansing, and so we were all in different cities, but we were all just, you know, trying to make it work. Just because of that, I think that just like tangible feeling of like we got a taste of how cool it can be, you know. And not all of them were that cool, you know.
Right.
And so yeah, I guess that kind of wraps it up, where it's just like, I don't even remember how we got that opportunity, to be honest, but it was one of those things where, and I guess too, I was like, I didn't really handle that side of the stuff. It was like, it's like, yeah, cool, I'm playing drums, let's go, like,
right,
you know. And that I regret a lot of that, you know. I'd love to have like really dove into like the business side of it and like been more like into it, but you know, I was pretty carefree and lax back in the day. But you know,
there is something to that though about being able to sort of just go from gig to gig and have, you know, you load in your kit, you set it up, you play, you load it out, and then you go to the next one, like and it, because speaking from my experience, at least just in the, I mean, the touring that my old band, it's a secret not to name drop my old band or anything like a tool, but like we had some, like, you know, weekends here and there. We think we did a week tour like at our peak or whatever, as far as how, the amount of touring we did, and I typically booked all of that. And when we really were trying to do, you know, a couple weekends a month, I remember being incredibly stressed out because, you know, I was like, well, I need to get these dates figured out. You know, my band's like expecting us to have a show days, and you know, the calendar would be empty a couple weeks before, and I still wouldn't have anything. And it was always really stressful. Then once you get to the show, it goes over and it happens, and you know. But I always wished that I could enjoy the playing of it more, or be like, you know, I was the guy checking the email, making sure we knew what time load in was and stuff like that. And I always kind of wished that, I love doing it, I could be stressed out about it all the time, I still love doing it, but I just wish I had experienced or been able to like enjoy just going from gig to gig rather than having to figure out like, well, okay, well, where's
logistics, you know, and all that.
But so okay, touring, you guys toured quite often, but in comparison to your Michigan scene presence, because you know, there for a while, you know, you guys were playing your own headlining shows at different venues. You were kind of playing, you had your, I remember you had your little pockets you went throughout the state. How important, like, they're both important if you, you know, you're trying to play new places and get your name out there, but do you think it's more important to sort of get your local presence going and then hit the road? Or is there a way that you can sort of do both at the same time, maybe? Like, what do you think is more beneficial?
Yeah, you know, like I guess personally, those building up that, like, you know, repertoire in, like, the local community or whatever, those were really, like, that was, like, you know, we were able to, like, fund a bunch of different things through those, and, like, and that was, like, kind of, like, the catalyst to start, like, having us branch off. And so it's, like, it always felt like kind of like a home base, and then we kind of, like, stretch, like, expand and then come back. And then hopefully it's a little bit stronger, you know, and then it's like you hit, try to hit all these different nodes, and then, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but I think it is important to kind of have, you know, some sort of local thing established so that I get, you get an idea of, like, can this thing, or, like, so I guess, too, to, like, hone in the show to, like, so you can take it different places, and then, like, so you can actually, like, build up the chops to being, you know, a band worth seeing and stuff like that. Yeah, I think it's super important to kind of, I guess, get the, because it's not a lot of traveling, you know, you can really promote it a lot. A lot of your friends will come and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, I feel like that's, you should probably, it's a cart before the horse mentality there. Like, yeah.
How many times do you think you guys had to play, like, say, okay, say you played, as you know, as this, obviously Tiger was playing before this group formed, like, how often do you guys think that you had to play, like, say, Lansing before it really felt like you could come to Lansing and you knew, like, maybe Lansing's a bad example.
Well, since no, you, I mean, maybe, yeah.
Since, like, you guys, some know. Of you lived there for a minute, but,
Yeah, I mean, that's so arbitrary, you know, it really all just depends, but... Yeah, like, if you know, if you play Lansing 5 times and they're all basement shows with, like, no promotion, like, they're probably not going to be, it's not probably not going to be growing stagnant, but if it's, like, you get an opening slot on a fusion show, or, like, you get more exposure, there's just so many factors that play into that, so, like, it's pretty hard to, like, put, like, a definitive, like, oh, you have to play at least this many times to get 100 people to your show or whatever, that's hard to kind of quantify, but but yeah, just leave it at that, I guess.
This might seem like a weird question, but it I don't mean it to sound the way it's gonna sound, but here it comes. How much of it do you think is just all bullshit, you know what I mean? like and it sounds weird, but, like,
well, which part of it?
Well, I mean, just like being in a, and again, that sounds bad, but I really don't know how else to put it. Like, being in a band and just, like, you know, you want to play all these markets and everything, and you want to grow your fan base, but at the same time, like, is there ever a point where you're just like, why am I doing this? You know?
Oh, I, like, mean, yeah, imposter syndrome is crazy real. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, maybe that's why I was, like, so laxed about the whole thing and not really super into, like, the business side of it and stuff, because there's, like, this idea is, like, I'm not, nobody really wants to come and watch me play drums, you know, like, I'm just this whoever, like, you know, nobody wants to come see this band, and but, and, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to, like, do that for a living or, like, make that a sustainable option, you have to, like, move past that and just, you know, try to believe that, you know, what you're doing is, has merit, and that, like, people will pay money to see you do that thing, and but no, I definitely know what you mean, that I, like, definitely have days like that where it's like, ah, this is all whatever, you know, throwing in the towel, it's bullshit, nobody cares. But I mean, everybody's just going through, nobody knows what they're doing, you know?
Right.
And so,
yeah, you could, I guess, yeah, you could make the same argument for life in general, yeah. I guess, yeah, like, it's really all bullshit, we don't know how to do this, it's just, we're all here,
yeah,
figuring it out. But what, so, like, those shows that were, like, I don't want to say not so great, but, like, you know, poorly attended, where you'd load all your stuff into the basement to play for the bands that played and one or two people.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, what did you have to tell yourself to sort of get past those?
Well, you know, yeah, that's a good question. But there's like that whole thing where like, even if it's that one person that you can impact, you know, it's not like I would throw in the towel if there wasn't anybody there, you know, like, you know, if there's one person there and you know, you freaking play your heart out and you put everything you have into it, you know, that's going to hopefully they'll remember that for a long time and might influence them in some way or whatever. And that's what I like to believe anyway, but yeah, you have to be 100% in it every time. Otherwise, like, why else would you do it? You know, it's like that starts to start to come into the thing where like, well, why are you doing this? Are you doing it to play in front of people, or are you doing it to play because you like to play?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was always, you know, I love playing the drums, still do, play them every day, you know? So it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's when you can sort of tell. And I think Temple House was a good way to learn that, doing shows there for a while. Because, you know, when you had the good shows, you know, you'd have upwards of, at the most, maybe 50 people in the basement. You know, those were the good shows, and, like, bands always loved that. You know, that's when you see bands at their best, when they're playing in front of 50 people, and they're excited because that many people came out their first time in Muskegon or whatever.
And that kind of, like, small space, too, it's, like, very impactful.
Right, because, yeah, 50 people, I mean, that's the number I threw out. But, yeah, 50 people in that basement would have been insane when it happened, you know. And you could always tell what bands were gonna... Because, you know, some bands that played there, they haven't... Nobody's really gone on to be, like, you know, the next... I don't know. Like, tried to think of a mainstream band and I couldn't come up with... Yeah. Yeah, no one's really gone on to be the next big thing or anything, but there have been some bands that played that basement that went on to, you know, tour successfully for a while or got signed to some label sometime or something. And you can always tell what bands those were going to be because... They played the shows, they played their first show there to four people, and they crushed it. And that whole night, they were just trying to interact with those four people and get to know them on a personal level.
Yeah,
because,
totally.
Because that's really all you can do at that point, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then they'd be like, hey, you know, this show didn't go the way we wanted to, but we'd still like to come back.
Because,
you know, those fans appreciate that and interact back with them. They have a good time. They still want to come back. And then that next show, because they interacted so well with those four people, maybe those four people bring four people, and then you got 20 people at the show.
Right,
you know,
the whole, like, the spider web effect or whatever. Like, they tell five friends, all five friends come, and it's like, yeah.
And, so you always knew... Like, and there were times where, like, you could tell the band was discouraged about it, and then I never heard from them again.
Right, you know?
But then I never really saw them do anything else after that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a case by case, too. But, yeah, you could always really tell. And I feel like you guys were like that a lot of the times, too. Because it wasn't like there was ever really, you know, a poorly attended show, but, you know, some shows were better than others. And,
yeah.
But every time you still went out there and played well, and anybody that was there still really enjoyed it. And I think that's very important to treat every show. It's cliche, but treat every show like it's your last, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
Let's get into some tour stuff. I'm going to check the time again. OCD about it. Okay. We're good. We've got plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Tour.
Yeah, so you guys did a lot of touring. I remember looking at, like, a bio or something, and it was upwards of... How many states do you think you played in?
Most of them.
Yeah,
of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. I was, like, surprised, but I guess it made sense once I saw, like, the full list. I feel like...
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's quite a bit of places to play. And what do you think... What's your favorite... aspect of touring? And then follow-up question, let's keep it, I guess, positive, but what's what's something about touring that you maybe learned, like, you weren't expecting it to be like that, and so you had to maybe learn how to overcome certain aspects of touring? Maybe we talked about it a little bit with the bad shows, but, like, maybe less on this performance aspect and just in the experience in general.
I guess I'll start with the more, like, worst thing. I mean, I guess just, you know, vans will like break down or like cause shit sometimes hits the fan and mm-hmm. and that's you know really like the test of character really comes out and yeah, I guess I'm kind of fumbling through my words here, but yeah, that's a good question. Like when I'm just trying to think.
Oh yeah,
thinking is hard. No, because there's just like it's all just such a blur at this point. But yeah, I guess it's like, you know, you can hear about like all these like band dynamics, and like, you know, I've heard just stories of like just everybody's just bickering and all this stuff. But that was never really the case for us. And so like no matter what happened, it was a bad show, or we got a flat tire, or like our windshield wipers broke, and we had to, you know, tie shoestring to the windshield wipers to get them to go back, and literally pulling them back and forth. You know, it's like we had each other, and it was, and that was all. That was great about it, you know. I guess that, yeah, I don't know. I guess it really taught me to like surround yourself with really good people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and yeah. But my favorite part about touring, I guess, is like the just exploring different places, the food. Like, I love Vermont. Like I've probably talked to Scott about this 100 times, but just Vermont is just so beautiful, and I don't know why that place like will always have a special place in my heart. But it's exploring nature, and because whenever we would have like an off day or something, you know, there's been times where we would like, if we were in a city, we'd just go to a mall or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like we would always try to like go outside and like just like look at the scenery specific to that location, whether it's the Smoky Mountains or hiking in like Champlain in Vermont. Like, you know, those things really, it's what it's all about, you know,
because mm-hmm.
the world is so big.
Well,
and a lot of people don't get to see how big the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And touring is a really cool way to see these little pockets of communities, and that are all like, everybody's generally really nice and supportive and into it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's, yeah.
And it's like, I like that you mentioned that, because if everything goes according to plan, it's a great way to do it for very, like a very low expense, really, especially if you're playing shows where your gas is being paid for, and really,
yeah,
you only
totally.
Have to worry about your food, you know, like it didn't hit me until we started doing a couple weekends that like some that went, you know, really well, and then you're like, you drive all the way to, you know, say Cleveland and back, and you didn't spend any money on gas, you know,
right.
Like, and you got to see all the stuff in the meantime, you know, and it's like, oh wow, that's, this can, you know, I can do this, I can travel. And then like thinking about it, because I took a vacation this year that was 2 weeks, and I traveled, you know, through the whole country, and thinking,
oh, nice.
About, and it was a lot of fun, but then after I got home, I was like, all right, I can't do anything for 2 months now, you know, I'm
yeah.
very broke.
Right.
And thinking about, and how, like, I was like, I kept saying in my head, I was like, if my band was here, if this was a tour, this money that I'm seeing disappear in front of me wouldn't,
right,
it wouldn't
right.
be going like that probably, but which is kind of depressing, I guess. I don't know why I brought that up, but like, yeah, touring, and it's a great way. I always thought like the best parts of it were after the shows. It like if you at one point were like, hey, if anyone has a place to crash, we'd really appreciate
right.
it, and then someone comes up to your merch table and says, hey, you can totally crash
yeah,
with us
no,
if you
good.
Want
yeah, that's a good point. Like
it makes you see, it gives you an opportunity to sort of see the humanity in other people, like people, just selflessness of
yeah totally
letting total strangers sleep on their floor, you know, no one really has to do that, but there
right.
are people out there willing to do that. And I always thought, like, once I started doing that, I was like, oh, this happens out here, and it made me want to do that for bands that came through here too.
Right, totally.
What do you, like, so Things Fall Apart, that was the first tour, and you guys got to know those guys really well.
Oh, yeah.
Love them. What, like, do you feel like some of the friendships you formed, either from touring or just playing and meeting people in bands and everything, do you think some of those friendships are more meaningful than the friendships you've had with people you've known maybe your whole life?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, it's definitely comparable.
Yeah, like, more meaningful maybe sounds bad because it lessens the relationships you have with people that are around here, but still, like...
But, you know, whether it's Things Fall Apart or Runaway Brother, like, spend a lot of time on the road with those guys as well, like, you know, you're seeing them every day, you're usually crashing at the same spot, you know, and it's just, like, just that repeated interaction with those people, you just get to know them, and you know, the music they make is really cool, and... You know, talking to them about just their process and all that stuff is really fun and unique, and yeah, it's great. Like, we just, like, Scott just turned 30 and I, like, organized this laser tag birthday party. You were there. Mm-hmm. And the Runaway Brother dudes, they drove up from Ohio to hang out with Scott and I, and it was just like, it's like super cool. Like, we love them so much, and yeah, like, it's kind of crazy to think just how we met them and that we never would know them otherwise if we, right. It's cool. This is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people have like the same, you know, same mindset, same like basic ideologies and stuff, and they just get along with them really well. It's that whole like DIY punk mentality.
What do you think? Hold on, I'm gonna check the time one more time. This is not a part of me I'm proud of, but we still have plenty of time. Okay. But anyways, I wish I hadn't checked the time because I had a question and then it slipped my mind once I went to check the time. No, let's talk about some of your favorite moments from touring, and they could be, you know, they could be fun or they could just be, you know, something you saw, you know, what really it's up to you, but what were some of the best times you think you had on the road?
Exploring Gatlinburg and the Smoky Mountains, that was a really incredible memory. Doing all the like the touristy stuff in Gatlinburg and getting lost and we were all just pretty intoxicated and Scott was driving the van and it's just all these different, I remember like we were up in the Smoky Mountains and driving around and like we had this like crazy like crappy GPS and it was like, yeah, just keep going this way, and like all of a sudden like the road ended and we're like, okay, and so thankfully we were able to turn a van and trailer around on this road and it was like, okay, now like take a right up this hill, and it was like straight incline, like so steep, and Scott's just like, yeah, we're doing it, and we go up, you know, what the GPS told us to do, we get up and it's just like there's like no road or anything, it's like a graveyard essentially, but it's like I just remember like I got out to pee. And it was just so clear outside, and I was like, we could just sleep here tonight, you know? Mm-hmm. But we ended up, like, getting out of it, and that's fine. But, you know, that was great. We found a rope swing in Nashville that was really, really cool.
Nice.
Like, on Reddit, I just found this, like, thread that was, like, it was, like, always on, like, our bucket list to, like, find a rope swing wherever we were traveling, and Nashville had one and it was really cool. It was like under this bridge and you'd like toss up the thing and you have to catch it and then you just like launch out and like, you know, do whatever backflips if you're brave enough. I wasn't, but yeah, there's some, it was like under this bridge, but like some of like the locals would like just walk out under the bridge, which is like made it like a 30-foot more drop, and would just jump straight down into it. And I didn't do that.
Wow. But. So can I tell you what one of my favorite stories were
from when I went on tour? I would love to pick your brain about this stuff, dude.
I can never remember, because I've told this story a couple of times since that. This was, I don't remember the year, but it might have been Philadelphia. I remember it was a house show, and outside, right by the door, they were selling vegan brownies, or vegan cookies, maybe. I don't know, it was irrelevant. But they had weed in them.
Yeah, they did.
I remember we just bought so many. Well, it wasn't that many, but we all bought more
cheap.
Yeah, we probably bought more than we should have, but we had them, and that was the most important thing. I remember we all ate, I think I only ate one, but I feel like the rest, like, we all had some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember it was during the tour, you guys did a bunch of shows. It was like maybe four shows with the band Caravels. And I think it was the drummer. We were all standing outside, and the drummer, I think he said goodbye to Sean like four times. And he just never noticed. And then the guy was off on his way, and then Sean turns to us and just goes, "Was that guy trying to say bye to me just now?" And oh, that's still, when I think about it from time to time, I just start cracking up. That's and awesome. It's one of my favorite stories. Yeah. Just,
dude, that band fucking rips.
Yeah. They were, that was the tour, I think, on the way to Bloodfest.
Yep. Because they were at Bloodfest. Mm-hmm. They were on Bloodfest as well.
And then I think we all went back and saw them. They played like months later in Grand Rapids, and I don't really think I saw much from that band after that. But yeah, that was always one of my favorite things that ever happened on those tours. I still laugh at that story today. Yeah, so like, all right, so we covered touring, friendships you make in touring, some of the bad shows, the good shows, mindsets. I feel like we talked about quite a bit from the touring aspect. Let's talk about what you're doing with music today.
Sure.
Yeah. What kind of projects are you working in today?
Yeah, I've been kind of dabbling in all sorts of different stuff. I've found a love for electronic music. Mm. And that largely stems from, you know, living with Scott and all of his lovely synthesizers. But definitely, like, the more, like, EDM aspect of it, I would say. Like, so for the past, like, we did it last Christmas was, like, our first one. But, like, with our Electric Forest fam, we, like, threw a party in our buddy's basement. He has a house in Detroit, and we're fortunate to let him, he, like, opened his doors to us and let us through this banging partying in the basement. I set up a drum kit, and it was like we rented a PA from Guitar Center, and nice. Devin, who I live with now, curated this, like, you know, DJ set, and I just, you know, did like live drum accompaniment to that, and it was just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did one in the spring as well, and then we just did one like for real at like a venue for the summer show, and we've been trying to do them like seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been really fun. Super cool to elevate that music and just groove. And I've been doing my own thing. Call it Observer. It's mm-hmm. like, played one show. I opened the spring Get Down, I guess it would be. It's mm-hmm. like, just me and a drum set and my laptop and SPDSX. And super well received. Super fun.
Right on.
I'll probably do more of it. Yeah, I just went and recorded drums for all that with Tyler this last weekend.
Nice.
It was great. Got some super cool tones, and Tyler's just such a madman when it comes to that stuff. It's super fun. So yeah, it's like, I guess the Observer stuff is like, it's like less dancey Tycho-ish, I guess. I don't know if you're familiar with Tycho. But just that kind of just like really dreamy, atmospheric, warm aesthetic with just like super, hopefully interesting grooves over top, you know.
What's it like to sort of have more control over your project? Not to say that you didn't have control in the other bands, but just to have it your own thing.
No, it's, I really like it. You know, there's the only person like getting in the way of pursuing it is me, so that's like cool. You don't really have to like, you know, put pressure on other people to like pursue it or whatever for your sake or anything like that, so that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of being able to just open my laptop and make something, or just whenever I get inspired, it's been super fulfilling. I've mm-hmm. been really liking it, especially like the whole production side and like plugins and like, you know, all this other crazy stuff that you don't want to spend money on, but then you end up spending money on, and it's just like, yeah. But I'm fortunate enough to like get another passion, which is graphic design, so like been learning how to incorporate those two things, like drums and design essentially. And so it's like the videos I post on Instagram and stuff like that, they're like, I like to think they look really nice and are color corrected and stuff like that, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's been it's been cool to have that. It'll always be like a source of income now, like that graphic design stuff. So mm-hmm. it's going to be a way for me to kind of supplement the whole the music thing mm-hmm. until I can hopefully tip the scales. So I have to do less graphic design and more music, you know, but.
Right. Yeah. It, I like, I just to make a quick note, we did pick a really expensive thing to get into.
Yeah.
Like we could have, you know, had, we could have gotten into like scrapbooking or doing puzzles, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
Those are two way ridiculous examples, but so what sort of role do you think like that sort of plays in your social media presence, like when you're trying to push your music as far as like your graphic design and making your videos sort of mm-hmm. look, you know, a little bit more presentable than maybe someone else's
right,
video
right.
who wouldn't put as much production value into it?
Yeah. You're saying like what's the advantage?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so like, you know, a lot of it is for just like me aesthetically wanting to put something of higher quality out into the world, but at the same time it's like, you know, hopefully my Instagram page can one be just like my, you know, I guess like electronic resume, like here's the sounds I'm capable of getting with, like, you know, I'm learning about drum recording and stuff a lot more now and just trying to get killer drum tones and you know, hopefully that all that stuff could kind of snowball and like turn into just like a lucrative opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know the ins and outs of it yet. It's like still pretty fresh, you know.
Sure.
But that's like the goal, hopefully, that, you know, I can grow a social media following and someone sees my stuff and either wants to work with me, hire me as a designer or what have you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is that sort of like the goal, like a year from now, are you hoping to like basically, yeah, like how you said, just sort of be a musician and have that outlet where you
yeah,
can wear
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, is that sort of the goal?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the goal, to just try to like continually grow that social media presence, and like it's such a like a stereotypical thing nowadays, but you know, it's a lucrative opportunity, you know, mm-hmm. if you can try to like, you know, do it right and like, yeah, I don't know. Kind of like that whole imposter syndrome even more is happening with that stuff too. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you have like less than 500 freaking followers, like what are you even doing? Like, it's just like, hopefully it's that snowball effect, like making like smart like small decisions over time will hopefully like have exponential effects that mm-hmm. like, you know.
Well, we're growing up in this era of your Vines, your TikToks, your Snapchats, where all our content is sometimes even pushed into 5 seconds, but you can have that 1 5-second clip and it'll change your life if it hits the right person.
Yeah,
and they
totally.
Share it and have the right, you know, group of friends or whatever. It is insane to think that it's a silly example, but do you remember that lady that bought the Chewbacca mask, and I was outside of like Walmart and she took a 5-minute video in her car and she was just laughing the whole time about how ridiculous she looked in the Chewbacca mask. That went viral, like millions of people saw that video.
Wow.
and it's crazy to think like that one woman, somebody's, you know, mom out there put on a Chewbacca mask and is now, she went on some talk shows and stuff
right.
about it, like
right.
you know, like you're more likely to have like that 15 minutes of fame you always hear about
right,
now.
Right, right.
And is, I mean, as crazy as, and you're not likely, but it could happen at any moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, it definitely could.
You get the right video where you slip on something, or you
yeah.
have a funny take on a new movie or something, and you know, the right tweet could make you a millionaire. You know what I mean?
It's pretty wild.
That's pretty extreme, I guess. But all right, we're winding down here. Winding down. That's so weird.
We're going so fast now. We're pumping the brakes a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it sounds like sometimes weird having a podcast where you feel like you have to acknowledge the like the ending or whatever.
Right,
like you
right.
have to bring it up at some point. Feels like it weird. It makes the tone a little weird, but that might just be me overthinking it. But anything you want to promote? Like, where can people follow you on Instagram?
Yeah,
and
sure. So my handle right now is Music by Observer. But I hopefully you could still show up if you just, you know, search my name. But yeah, I don't really tweet. Facebook I'm hardly on anymore either, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, Instagram is like the main thing. Hopefully getting some music out before the end of this year. And then they'll just, I have demos up on Bandcamp, just musicbyobserver.bandcamp.com. Also have SoundCloud, it's the same, it's like /musicbyobserver. Trying to keep all that consistent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, really.
Right on. All right, I'll close at the last. I did one of these yesterday, actually, and I closed with I like to close. I have two different ways I like to close, and I did the "What's something you want to say to yourself in the future" one yesterday. So I'm not going to do that one today.
Okay.
But I'm going to do what's something you'd say to somebody that is thinking about getting into music or becoming involved in playing and like is a little timid or hesitant about doing it.
Surround yourself with people that are better than you and learn as much as you can from them and just do it. Because the key to being good at something is you have to kind of sort of suck at it first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I consider myself good at the drums, but I definitely wasn't always good at the drums. You know, it takes, and you got to be dedicated. You know, whatever inspires you, just hold on to it and just do it, you know?
Right on.
I also want to say this. This has nothing to do with the answer, but I'm a little upset that you don't do videos of your podcast.
Oh yeah,
because then people can't see your $1 million smile.
Oh jeez, thank you. That is one of my favorite compliments I've ever gotten. I don't ever get sick of hearing it. Ever. I love it, and I feel like there was a time where it was you and Corey that would say that the most, and then you guys said it enough to where my friends started saying it too, and I was just like, oh, I'm on heaven right now.
Yeah.
But
$1 million smile, man.
Jesus Christ. Well, thank you for doing this podcast.
Dude, no problem. Thank you for having me. It's you're one of my favorite people, dude. I'm glad that you're doing this. Keep doing it, man. I really like what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I definitely will do this again sometime. Part two.
Part two.
Hell yeah.